I'm Bill Castle, and this is Free Expression. This program is all about conveying the Christian message from a Catholic point of view and defending the liberty which makes it possible to do that. We talk with creative, interesting people spotlighting the harmful influence of Freemasonry and exposing the sexualization of teaching in public schools. Join us. Sit back and enjoy some free expression. Public education has been a part of American life for well over a century. Those who went through public schools, myself included, can point to many excellent teachers whose influence gave shape to our lives. But the COVID lockdowns dealt a serious blow to the image of public instruction. Online classes gave parents a first-hand view of what goes on in America's classrooms, and very often the picture was pretty ugly. In all too many public schools today, teaching involves heavy doses of propaganda. Sex and gender get particular emphasis. We've had recent revelations of how schools promote radical approaches to sex education, use highly graphic books and instructional materials, and affirm the so-called gender identities of young children. The National Education Association, America's largest teachers' union, is an important player in all this. And during June, known these days as Pride Month, the NEA held nationwide demonstrations in support of LGBT causes. June 10th was dubbed a day of action, promoting the freedom to learn and teach truth. Noelle Maring is a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and the author of the book Awake Not Woke, A Christian Response to the Cult of Progressive Ideology. She keeps a sharp eye on education trends. She's been with us before, and we turn to her again for some insights into what's happening in our public schools. Noelle, thanks for speaking with us once more.
Great to be back here with you. Thanks for having me.
Why have the public schools become so preoccupied with sex and gender?
Well, I think we have to realize that there's been a long movement to use national education to create laboratories to pump out activists. Teachers increasingly see their role as being engineers of social change by indoctrinating children into primarily two things, and to have a collectivist mindset, to think of themselves and define themselves based on social oppression, but also to really indoctrinate them into radical gender ideology, as we're seeing running rampant now. It feels as though it's sort of happening all at once and exploded onto the scene, but this has been a long-term plan, and it's largely been affected through colleges of education, so teaching the teachers and then superintendents and having them go back to their districts and disseminate a new sort of ideology into their school districts. So this has been, in some ways, a battle of position, just getting the right people, activists with the right political ideology into key positions and then letting it bear rotten fruit from there.
I guess this reflects what they call the long march through the institutions. You now have several generations of teachers that have been imbued with all of this ideological stuff.
That's exactly right. And as you said earlier, there are many wonderful teachers of great goodwill who are in there for the right reasons and want to affect real, you know, educate children in true education to help them develop into free people who can think clearly and critically and live lives of virtue. But unfortunately, increasingly, they are being co-opted or pressured to adopt these sorts of propaganda tactics, particularly with the gender stuff. And a lot of them are finding they actually just have to leave the public education system, that it's too fraught, you know, and there's too much coercion and pressure to try to reform it from within. So there's a real mix there, and increasingly the good ones are getting pushed out.
And we're not just talking about teachers discussing these issues or bringing them up for discussion in classrooms. Sometimes there's real hands-on approach. I mean, there have been reports of, certainly using the preferred pronoun thing, but in some instances, schools have even provided opposite-sex clothing for kids to wear in class, and it's all being held without consultation with parents.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that that's, you know, not by accident by any means. I think part of the real goal is to create a wedge, a real wedge that is very hard to bridge between children and their families. You know, it's been written about extensively by, you know, many people with a lot of influence who have socialist leanings, if not outright socialist, that schools are an opportunity to kind of make the family less and less influential. Our president recently, at his Pride event, spoke about our kids as though they were already the government's. He said, yeah, you know, these are not just someone else's kids, these are our children. And in the context of the Pride event, it was rather chilling, I think, how much that they see that our kids are theirs to not educate towards, formational way, but to, in a deformational way, to get them to see themselves as malleable to the point where their bodies really mean nothing, that they can be anything, which means that they mean nothing. And so, you know, having the closets with the clothes to change your gender, socially change your gender, and do it in secret is one piece of that. Another piece of it is, rather than focusing on, you know, the very paltry performance in math and reading and all the classical understanding of what an education is for, now they're introducing, at the youngest of ages, really lurid sexual content. It's quite disturbing. And so, you know, then once those books get banned, which oftentimes are pretty explicitly pornographic, they claim censorship. Conservatives, yes, want to censor. The Christians want to censor. As absurd as saying if schools were teaching kids how to commit suicide or something, and then some people objected, and then they would claim censorship. You know, of course you can only teach children things that are appropriate and not deeply harmful. But that's the play, is that they, you know, turn it around on the parents who are responding as any parent would.
Yeah, that really makes it tough. I mean, you can see even in the title of this project, Teach Truth Day of Action, you know, the idea that the schools are teaching the unassailable truth, and anybody who raises questions about that obviously isn't interested in truth. They've been able to claim the moral high ground in that way, and it really makes it tough.
That's right. It's really manipulative. You know, I think that this is a classic tactic, is that you use words and they mean almost exactly the opposite, oftentimes, of what they sound like they mean. So teaching truth sounds wonderful, of course. The point of education is for the sake of truth. But, you know, the bait and switch there is that the goal is not truth for them. It's power. It's propaganda. It's political power. It's politicized influence. It's certainly not truth. I mean, the truth of the matter is that a boy, it cannot be a girl based on his inner understanding of what he thinks he is and what he's been, you know, encouraged to think of himself. That's the truth. And the schools are certainly not advocating for that when they say that they want the right to be able to teach the truth. They want to be able to deform the kids in this politicized way. But it's a manipulation. And I think that they claim the moral high ground, but the more and more, I think increasingly, parents are really seeing through that and seeing that it's a manipulation. It's one thing when it's directed at you, but when it starts being directed at your kids, I think parents really start to wake up and become more alarmed and more willing to resist.
But how can that awareness be translated into effective action? We've seen demonstrations at school boards, parents standing up and complaining about all of this, and they wind up being investigated by the FBI and called terrorists.
Yeah, that's right. It's you know, both encouraging and also tricky to have it remain as a parent grassroots movement. It's encouraging because it's excellent to see that happening, that sort of energy and that willingness, that courage, and that needs to keep happening. But the hard thing is that parents tend to get demoralized, I think, after a while. And particularly, you know, your kids get older and then they're no longer maybe at that school, and so it's hard to keep up that energy and that fight. So we need to encourage that parent movement, but also have some more organizational tactics. Organizing to get the right people on school boards, into positions of power in our local state governments, is key, I think, to keeping up the momentum that has been so wonderfully started.
That's tough, though. The left is aware that this is where the rubber meets the road, and they're pumping tons of money into these local school board and local official elections.
That's absolutely right. It's extremely tough, and they are, in some ways, in many ways, way better at that game than we are. I think the easiest and the most immediate solution here is pulling our kids out. I know that's a hard thing to say to some people who don't feel like they have great options, not a good private school, or maybe they can't afford it, or maybe homeschooling feels overwhelming. But this is the time to start getting creative and trying to make what might seem challenging feasible again. Maybe it's linking arms with like-minded parents and trying to start some sort of homeschool co-op or that sort of thing. But I think we have to start thinking outside of the public education box. It's way past time to just feel that we can trust the moral formation of our kids to this sort of institution.
What can parents do? Where can they turn for information so that they don't have to struggle alone? Maybe make connections with other parents who are feeling the same way, find out information that could be useful. Any thoughts?
At my think tank, actually, Ethics and Public Policy Center, there's one of the projects is called the Person Identity Project. they're doing excellent work, and they've got a lot of resources that parents can learn from on the site there. So I would maybe start there at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, Person and Identity Project. It's an excellent place for parents, I think.
And, of course, your book, Awake Not Woke, A Christian Response to the Cult of Progressive Ideology. Where can they find that?
Pretty much anywhere books are sold, including our publisher, Tan Books, and also our website, theologyofhome.com. We have a shop there as well as a blog and resources for people trying to get away from the toxic news cycle but still remain informed and not be have their minds polluted. So, but piece of that is also a shop, and we sell our books there too.
Noel Mehring of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, thanks very much for taking time to talk about this. This is a real tough problem, and more families are being caught up in this maelstrom of sexual confusion.
Thank you for putting a spotlight on it.
The Ethics and Public Policy Center can be found online at eppc.org. In 1885, an Irish missionary priest, Monsignor George F. Dillon, sent something of a shockwave through the Catholic world with publication of a book titled The War of the Antichrist with the Church and Christian Civilization. Pope Leo XIII had taken a strong stand against Freemasonry, which he'd named as the public face of a cosmic spiritual war against all things holy. Monsignor Dillon's book described the details of that war and how the Masons figured in it. The Pope was so impressed with Dillon's work that he not only endorsed the book, he personally paid for translation of an Italian edition. Today we tend to think of Masonry as a bunch of fun guys who wear symbolic aprons, march in the occasional parade, and support various worthwhile civic causes. Many well-known figures have been lodge members, even a few presidents, George Washington most prominent among them. There's no doubt that the cosmic war goes on. Things being as they are right now, I'd say the forces of evil are having a field day. The question is, are the Masons involved? And if so, how? Joshua Charles is a writer and something of a Renaissance man. He was trained as an attorney. He's been a political speechwriter, even a concert pianist. He's authored, edited, or contributed to numerous books, and he's the editor of a new edition of Dillon's work available from Tan Books. Joshua Charles, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Bill. I'm honored to be here.
Give us some background on the War of the Antichrist. How did the book come about, and what was its impact at the time?
I originally read the book during the lockdowns of 2020, you know, that very uneventful period we all went through.
Right.
And I was struck by how relevant it was to not only what had happened maybe the last century or so, but what was happening, frankly, at that time and has been happening since. And I want to make not a correction, but just an important update, and that is that Freemasons, we shouldn't be thinking about, you know, are the guys who are currently Freemasons involved in some of the world's woes. I'm sure some of them are, but we're not talking about the average guy that's doing some charity event. That's not what we're talking about. That's not what Dillon's talking about either.
Hmm.
Dillon is ultimately talking about an occult attempt to overturn Christian civilization, in which case it is a historical fact that many Freemasons were involved in that. And Dillon also makes very clear that the average Freemason is not who we're talking about here. He's talking about a much more organized plot than that. He's talking about a totally different theology, philosophy than Christendom. And Pope Leo XIII makes these same qualifications as well. Both of them, when they use the term Freemasonry, they're specific and they're explicit about this. They're referring to just occultism in general. They're referring to all the secret societies. And all the secret societies, that they are united by one thing. One, the Catholic Church is their greatest enemy. And two, in every area of life, individual and social, I would say the ideology they're actuated by, whether they realize it or not, is anti-sacramental. They want to separate nature from grace. Now, what does that mean in Catholic terms? It means that they want to separate our dead and incapable of pleasing God human nature in original sin from the grace and healing that's made available to us in the sacraments, preeminently baptism and the Eucharist. And so that's the entire essence of the Freemasonic occult project, is separate nature from grace. So how does that manifest itself? Well, we outline their agenda, and Leo XIII's Monsignor Dillon outlined this agenda very, very clearly. And basically that agenda consisted of destroying the temporal and spiritual authority of the Pope, complete separation of church and state, again, separating nature from supernature, nature from grace, desacramentalizing marriage, making it basically nothing but, actually, in fact, easier to break than an average business contract. Look at where we are today with no-fault divorce. I mean, if there were no-fault business contracts, business would shut down, but we have no-fault divorce now. They wanted completely secularized education, once again, separating nature from grace, separating the instruction of the pupil from divine truths of religion. They wanted to demoralize the population, literally, not just make them sad and depressed, although that certainly happened in many ways, but they wanted to lower the moral quality of the population. Now, why? Well, Leo XIII explains very clearly, essentially, when the climax of this plot to overturn Christendom comes, if you have a bunch of immoral people in your population, you have a compliant population. Why is that? Because the human soul consists of mostly intellect and will. That's our two primary powers. The intellect is how we know what's right and wrong, and the will is how we choose. And if you have a bunch of people who have been habituating their will to choosing evil, who are addicted to pornography or binging on Netflix or being slothful and gluttonous in their food habits, as I think many of us today probably are, you have a society that's essentially prepared its will to give in to evil. That's why. And then finally, they both say that Freemasonry, which again is a catch-all for all occultism, all the secret societies, that it's ultimately actuated by a form of socialist communist pantheism, that it will in fact end in pantheism, a form of nature worship, which makes sense because they want to essentially separate nature from grace. And it's a lot to get into. I go into it a lot more in the introduction. It's a pretty substantial introduction. But I basically explain why that is. And so that's the essence of their plot. And it manifests in all these ways: church-state relations, the family, the education of children, the general morals of the population. Everything in occultism is to separate nature from grace.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that these effects are being played out now. We've certainly seen a general deterioration across the whole breadth of society. But who are these people, and what's their motivation? I mean, if we're not talking about the friendly Masonic lodge down the street, who are we talking about?
Well, the friendly Masonic lodge down the street is actually, you know, an example that Leo XIII and Monsignor Dillon both point to. One of the things that dupes a lot of people into thinking Freemasonry is harmless. But the fact is there have been countless papal exhortations to avoid Freemasonry. It's been forbidden to be a Freemason for centuries. And so what we're talking about is much different than simply the guys at the local lodge, though many of the earliest Freemasons did start out that way, engaged in revolutionary plots, because there are many countries in Europe where, you know, things like freedom of speech were not absolute. And so if you were caught openly saying, you know, the king or the queen or whatnot should be overthrown, that we should have a revolution, you know, that sort of talk would get you arrested. So the early Masonic lodges did, in fact, become a place where sorts of sedition and revolutionary talk would, in fact, take place. But again, like I said just before, their ultimate goal goes back to the Garden of Eden, the separation of nature from grace. When Satan tempted Eve, what did he say? He said, well, if you consume this tree, the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, you will become like gods. Well, what's implicit in that statement? Implicit in that statement is that there is some sort of divinity latent within humanity that Satan is basically trying to get Adam and Eve to believe it's there, and that by their own efforts, they can sort of uncover it and access that inner divinity. Well, if you look at the average show today, like Oprah, or if you look at all the music today, or you look at, I mean, I think the epitome of this is probably the transgender movement of I am master even over my own body. My own body can be X. God could have given me body X, but I'm going to say it's Y. So essentially, it goes back to the garden, of you shall be as gods, and the way you'll access divinity is through your own effort. You do not have to partake of grace. Now, grace is incredibly important to the Catholic faith. What is grace? Grace is the indwelling life of God. The old temple in Jerusalem was kind of a picture of what would happen to the human soul in the new covenant. The old covenant temple was inhabited by God's glory, his Shekinah, the fire of God that came down when Solomon consecrated the temple and came and inhabited the Holy of Holies. Well, this is a picture of what, under the new covenant of Christ, happens in the human soul. God's living presence comes to live in our souls, tabernacle in our souls, which makes us temples, which is what St. Paul says. He says, do you not know you are the temple of God? And if you destroy God's temple, God will destroy you. Well, that is why we believe that we are a grace-based religion, meaning God has given us a gift, and absent that gift, we cannot save ourselves, okay? That's the essence of the Catholic faith. I came from Protestantism, so I always thought the Catholic faith was works-based, and you've got to earn your salvation. Nothing could be further from the truth. Now, once we've received this grace, we need to obey God's commandments, but he's given us the ability to obey them when he gives us this grace. So the whole point is, we as Catholics believe you must receive the divinity as a gift. We must receive it as a gift rather than grasp for it as if it's in ourselves already. And so, but when you look at our contemporary culture today, everywhere you look, people are taught, you are like God. You are like God. So it's actually much easier to be a Satanist or an occultist than most people realize. The essence is you must believe you're as God, then you are in charge, and you do not require God's indwelling life to be in your soul to be saved, essentially. You need to believe that you are sufficient for your own efforts. And so everything in Freemasonry is about this contention, that man, through his own resources, through his own moral, spiritual development, is capable of reaching a sort of beatitude, a sort of level of virtue that is already latent within him. He just needs to have the right gnosis, the right knowledge to access it and to get it going. And so that's really what this is all about. The Catholic Church has said, no, we all require God's grace in marriage, in church and state, in our individual moral lives, in schools, and all that. Whereas Masonry and occultism, whenever you look at all their writings, they want to completely separate all of those things from the influence of the Catholic Church.
I suppose the way things are playing out, it's making us all into conspiracy theorists in one way or another. So I can't get away from the fundamental question. Are we talking about just a way of thinking that people can fall into, or are we talking about active plotting and planning and collusion?
I think it's both. I mean, and I think the evidence is all around us. I mean, when you lay out the agenda as outlined by Leo XIII and Monsignor Dillon, virtually every plank of it has been achieved. I mean, it's in 1885. Remember, this is when Monsignor Dillon was writing. In 1885, many of these things remained to be done. Many of them were well on their way, but they were far from being done to the extent they are now. You know, my mom's a teacher. I have other mentors who are teachers. The things they tell me that are in schools, and many people have been seeing this lately, I mean, that would have been unimaginable to Monsignor Dillon. I think it would have gone beyond his wildest imaginations of what was coming. And so, no, this isn't, I mean, yes, I believe personally that there are powerful forces in this world that are actuated by this exact same principle in the introduction I called sola natura, nature alone. The reason I chose that term is not just to be, you know, choose a Latin term and sound all fancy and smart, whatever. I chose it because as a former Protestant, many of the Protestant heresies were things like sola fide, faith alone, sola scriptura, scripture alone, things like that.
Right.
And so that's why I chose to kind of play off that and say, call it a sola natura, nature alone. Everywhere you look, the agenda outlined by Monsignor Dillon, and again, this book was endorsed by Leo XIII, has been achieved. And many of the values that most people today take for granted, if you just live in our culture and you just go along with the popular assumptions of our culture, you will believe in this Masonic agenda. It's become that normative in our civilization. And people need to realize that for much of Western history, this was not normative at all. We live in a totally turned upside down civilization from that of our ancestors. So we're not just talking about plottings going on now. We're talking about a plot that has, in many ways, achieved its aims. I personally believe we're at the tail end of that.
So you expect things to get better?
No. Not in the short term. As Catholics, everybody has a duty to work for things to get better. But I personally believe that things will likely be getting worse, and that our goal, our calling, our vocation will be to suffer it well. In the meantime, we should fight back as much as we can in the state, in our families, in our parishes. But Catholics are called to suffer well. And I think for those of us who are looking for that opportunity so that we can attain heaven, I think opportunities will be available.
Well, where can people find the book? Where can they get more information or even purchase it?
Everywhere. On TAN, it's on Amazon. TAN Books is the Catholic publisher it's published by. Those are the two sources I've seen. I've heard from other friends that it's at local Catholic bookstores. But yeah, TAN and Amazon is where I would suggest people go.
Joshua Charles, The War of the Antichrist with the Church and Christian Civilization, a new edition of this classic work by Monsignor George F. Dillon. Thanks very much for being with us. You are talking about the scariest, most challenging aspect of life today, and it's something people need to address.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. Yeah, it's humbling. You know, as I'll just make the same point that Monsignor Dillon and Leo XIII made, that there's two extremes in the church today. I'll just sum it up. There's some that say there's a Mason under every rock. That's not true. But then there are others who say all this is just tinfoil hat conspiracy theories. Well, if that's the case, then multiple popes of the Catholic Church were tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists. I don't think that's true either. So the point is, we know what our marching orders as Catholics is. We know we need to love God with our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and our neighbors as ourselves. As long as we do that, we will remain on the straight and narrow. We don't need to have excessive curiosity about this topic, but we also need to be clear-eyed about it and realize that there very much has been a plot to overturn Christian civilization. It's been warned about repeatedly by the popes. The popes had access to a lot of information that we don't. You know, there used to be the papal state, so they came into possession of all sorts of documents. And Monsignor Dillon lays out very ably, in a way that Pope Leo XIII found worthy of his endorsement, exactly what the nature of this plot was. People need to know about it, but not obsess about it, is what my suggestion is.
Be with us next time when we explore other aspects of religious communication and look deeper into the great Christian heritage of free expression. Free Expression with Bill Castle is a production of Good Shepherd Catholic Radio and Company Publications, where good books, good music, and good radio are always good company. Dan Kuras provided technical assistance. Theme and incidental music are by Dan Adam. The program was produced and directed by Bill Castle. This is Good Shepherd Catholic Radio.